With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi everyone, we made it to Friday. Woo, lucky us, lucky you. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We had Thursday Night Football last night. Bengals with a big win over the Ravens. Tom Brady's got some words for the Jaguars, believe it or not, but we are going to start with the ever popular Week 2 must win. Seems impossible to grasp, but for the Dallas Cowboys, who lost their first game, who have questions surrounding who they are and what they can do, a divisional game Sunday night against their arch rival Giants, well, that's a must win for them, especially for their quarterback, Dak Prescott, after only scoring 8 points and throwing for only 179 yards last week. Dak Prescott knows he has to improve.
Simply just got to play better, and that's what this week's about. That's what going forward, and fortunate enough to have 50 more games to do that.
Everybody here wants to win, and we know the importance of this game. You know, you don't want to get 0-2 and start the season off that way, even though it is a long season. You just want to start fast and finish strong, too.
Can't beat ourselves. We can't get behind early in the game. We can't get behind the sticks. We got to come out. You got to establish that run and yeah, I get some momentum early. We got to start fast.
Landon Collins said earlier this week that, again, they were going to concentrate on Zeke. They wanted to put the ball in your hands because they think they had a better chance.
Challenge accepted. Challenge accepted.
It all sounds great. He's saying the right things, and he sounds like he's fired up and ready to go. These are two 0-1 teams, both in the NFC East, both need this game. Who needs the win more, though? It's the Giants or the Cowboys, see?
Now, that's hard to say which team needs it more. Both of them need it more. The numbers are
drastic if you fall 0-2.
It's just the numbers are staggering as far as how could you be in your second game in September in a 16-game schedule. OBJ said, yeah, it's a long season and everything, but the numbers say if you get to 0-2, I think that Dallas, there's more pressure. Because I think Dallas, they listen to that more so than the Giants. The Giants are coming off an awful season. I think that they can recover mentally and from the media around them because it would be a tough team in Jacksonville. It would be on the road to Dallas. I just think Dallas, because of their optics and because in the last four games, people have said the same thing that Landon Collins said, put the game in Dak's hand. And they've scored 46 points in their last four games. So the pressure is on the Dallas Cowboys because I don't believe they can score effectively over the course of this long season. They're going to have times where they're going to sputter like they did against Carolina. And I just believe that they're starting to listen. You could hear the ownership talking about the announcers and everything and trying to live up to the, now, you know, armchair quarterbacks. That's what they call Troy Aikman. He did.
Your Hall of Fame three Super Bowl champion quarterback.
He armchaired you to three Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Okay, so as far as knowing offensive football, Troy wasn't personal. He was talking about this is what teams who are like Dallas, what they have to do. And I can see Dallas listening to them. And also, I can see Dallas is stuck. And they're stuck is because a viable option to give them a boost would be to sign Dez Bryant. And because of everything that's happened, they're not going to swallow their pride and say, you know something, he could help us. And Dez Bryant could help the Cowboys today.
And the owner wouldn't veto it. The owner would probably be all for it. The owner's hanging out with him at a...
Well, I don't know that, Nick. I don't know that. Dallas is so screwed up as far as how they do things. If whatever Jerry wants, Jerry's going to get. I don't think Jerry can do that based on the decisions and the promises they made to this coaching staff and the promises that they made to Dak. So I don't believe that. No.
Well, hold on. Maybe I misstated it. What I'm saying is if the coaching staff came to Jerry and said, we want to sign Dez Bryant, I don't think Jerry would stand in the way. That's what I'm saying, that Jerry might not force the issue, but I don't you disagree?
I think that Jerry likes to be where he's the guy that, oh, I want Dez, but the coaches don't. I think Jerry likes to play that game.
Oh,
and if Jerry wanted him to be there,
he'd be
there. Ain't no, thank you.
Okay.
That's the way Jerry has run things.
All right, so you addressed this from the Dallas perspective and the point you were making about 0-2. You fall 0-2, you miss the playoffs 90% of the time. Now, usually that means, because you're not a very good team if you fall 0-2, but sometimes it means you just, tough schedule coming up, you can find a way to go the rest of the way, go 10-4. And 10 wins doesn't always get you there. I think there'll be a 10-win team left out in the NFC this year. And that's why I think this game for the Giants, given what they have coming up, is absolutely critical. The Giants' schedule leading into their bye, look at that. You're at the Texans, okay, winnable. Saints, 11 wins last year. Panthers, 11 wins last year. Eagles, 13 wins in a Super Bowl last year. Falcons, 10 wins last year. And then Washington. That's leading up to your bye. You have a month straight of double-digit win playoff teams from last year after this week. And seasons can get away from you quick. And if the Giants fall to 0-2, when they have games coming up where they will be underdog, 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 five straight games where I think they will go into that game as the Vegas underdog. You can the Darnold Barkley discussions will start in full force in this city, and you will start saying, wait, what did we do this offseason? So I look at the Giants and I say they have to win this game. I look at the Cowboys and say because of what they have coming up after, it wouldn't be great and people will react negatively, but they have an exit plan if they don't win this game.
Giants general manager, he's got one game under his belt. Giants head coach got one game under his belt. Giants head coach got a five-year contract. Jason Garrett, you talking about the draft. Sure. They're going to start talking about Jason Garrett's head in Dallas. So I think
they've gotten rid of everyone else. Jason Garrett's pretty much the last guy.
Oh, when they change the staff, the next thing is to change the head coach. So both of them have a substantial amount of real pressure on them week number two.
You know, we've spoken so much about Dak Prescott and how much Dak is going to really need to bounce back this year and how much pressure is on Dak and he's going to have to run this offense and all of this other stuff. We can't dismiss what's going on with Eli Manning. There were a lot of questions about Eli Manning coming in. You mentioned the Giants' schedule. It's certainly not going to be easy. He's coming off a shaky week, you know, threw a pick six, didn't have a passing touchdown. How much pressure? Yeah, we know the pressure on Dak, but how much pressure is on Eli Manning in this game?
It's not as much on Dak Prescott. The pick six touchdown was a deflected pass. It wasn't his fault. It wasn't like it was bad coverage. Deflected passes happen. Eli's won a couple Super Bowls. Yeah, there's pressure on him. But what's going on with Dak? Dak's trying to get a new contract. Dallas has to decide on who their franchise quarterback is. Yeah, Eli can have another bad season. But you can't take away what he's already done. So, yes, they would love Eli to play better. That offensive line, though, and that money that they spent on the offensive line to get better, is it really better? I didn't see a better offensive line. Now, as far as him getting the ball to other people to be able to help support OBJ, that is the responsibility of Eli and the coaching staff.
And if you're worried about the Giants' offensive line looking a lot like it did last year, the reason for optimism would be that it usually does take offensive line some time to gel. You have a new left tackle. You have a rookie guard. You have a guy who was playing left tackle who's now playing right tackle. So if you're looking for reasons for optimism, it is that was a almost entirely new unit's first game together, and that as the season goes on, they could blend better. As far as Dak goes, we have drawn the line of demarcation as his rookie season and then everything since then. But there's a more jarring one, which is everything Dak did up until the week Zeke was actually suspended and everything he's done since then. When Zeke actually had to serve the suspension, they were coming off a 28-17 win against a good Kansas City Chiefs team. The Cowboys were 5-3. Dak on the season was 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, a 97 quarterback rating. Since then, from the Zeke suspension to where we sit here today, they're 4-5. He has 6 touchdowns to 9 picks and a 75 rating. Yes, we knew what changed during the suspension, but he's now played 3 games since the suspension, and he still hasn't recovered. He still hasn't gotten back anywhere close to that level that he was. 23 touchdowns, 4 picks was his rookie year. But he started off last year, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. That was similar. All right, more touchdowns, few more picks. You would take that trajectory every time. 6 touchdowns, 9 picks, and 75 rating in the 9 games since Zeke had to serve that suspension. That is a brutal indictment on where he is right now as a quarterback.
So what does he have to do Sunday now against the Giants?
Just like any other quarterback, you got to make throws. You got to make throws. There is no easy way around this. You can't hide them. They're going to put a number of men close to the line of scrimmage, at least seven. And sometimes the Carolina game, 50% of the time, they had eight people in the box. That means outside. That's how you have to – you cannot win running against eight men boxes, all right? They have to throw the ball. You run the ball in the NFL to eat up the clock, to rest your defense, and to move the ball. To score the ball in the NFL, you have to throw the football. And until Dallas can throw it effectively, we will see these numbers as far as scoring offense be one of the worst teams in the league.
And we've spent 10 minutes on this, and we've only talked about the offense of the Cowboys and the offense of the Giants. Both of these teams, after week one, I would imagine very different demeanors and very different feelings in the meeting rooms for the team's defenses as opposed to their offenses. The Giants' defense in week one, I thought, played very well against, albeit a limited offense in Jacksonville. And the Cowboys' defense played an excellent game against Cam Newton, the Carolina Panthers. Both of these defenses came out ready for the season. The offenses for both these teams struggled mightily to open the season.
Lucky for us, we'll talk about this a couple more times. You can talk as much defense as you want.
Absolutely.
Coming up on the other side, though, let's talk some Packers. Can a hobbled Aaron Rodgers still take down the Vikings? Next on First Things First. Aaron Rodgers missing practice again on Thursday. This as he continues to recover from a sprained knee. The truth is, he doesn't need to practice in order to play this weekend. He's Aaron Rodgers. The other truth? He desperately wants to play this Vikings team, the one which knocked him out for most of last season. But Mike McCarthy says playing Sunday is no layup. Aaron Rodgers is still day-to-day. All right, see, if he does play, who's got the edge here, the Vikings or the Packers?
Well, first, I think a point that football fans should be watching for, that now we have this new collective bargaining agreement and the players are practicing a lot less. And they have less two-a-day practices. They have less padded practices. We used to just have a common practice where, of course, we practice a lot more two-a-days. But I used to always like to get an injury or two, a woo-woo, before the season started. Because your body needs to be able to get in the physical shape, not from weight room. So I'm talking about being banged, people falling on you, things like that. You don't get that now. So if you look at the first week of the season, if you look at how many marquee players that were hurt and injured and will have long-term injuries, I think that part of football is missing now with the practice time and the lack of preseason games. Everyone wants their guys to be healthy for the first game, but as soon as they get a significant hit, they're getting injured.
So I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So the audience knows. So, like, you almost think the way practices used to be done, training camp used to be done, you wouldn't get an immunity to these injuries, but it would be a similar type
of
thing.
You build up a tolerance.
Exactly.
And your body starts to get in game type of shape. Now you see Aaron Rodgers' first hit, he's out. Now, anyone can get hurt on that hit, but it's just an observation that I have seen on a regular basis after watching week number two started last night. But as far as Aaron Rodgers, I think it's on the board that he might not play. I know he wants to play, but you're talking about a Sunday night game. You're talking about soreness that is – he's still sore now. And it's Friday. So now what does he jeopardize in game number two going against a very good defense who we know they're going to get after Aaron Rodgers? And if Aaron can't get out of the pocket, if he can't protect himself, then I'm worried about that, because this is not a defense that you can play – the way he played in the second half.
It's the worst defense to play injured. The worst defense. And you might say there's no good defense, but the way the Vikings generate pressure naturally, mm-hmm. with their D tackles being able to collapse that part of the pocket, the way you get away from that is escaping outside, which is normally what he does brilliantly.
And what a lot of people aren't, because it's the Vikings' advantage, because they're familiar with Aaron. They play him twice a year. Other teams, you might play Aaron once every 3 years, once every 2 years. So what you know about him is not the intel that even the Bears know, the Lions, and the Vikings. So if Aaron does play in this game, which I think, it, like the coach said yesterday, it's not a layup that he would play, it's a huge advantage to the Vikings because they're so familiar with who he is. And now They don't have to worry about him getting outside the pocket. They know exactly where he's going to be, and I believe they can tee off on him.
For a multitude of reasons, this is a perfect situation for Minnesota, assuming he plays. Obviously, if he doesn't play, that I don't think that, right, then I don't think the Packers have a chance. But to answer your question, if he plays, all right, so you're facing a compromise, Aaron Rodgers. There's check one. A running back who I actually thought was a nice story for the Packers last year, Aaron Jones. This is the last game he's not going to be back after his drug suspension in the offseason. I talked to Kyle Rudolph a couple days ago. The first thing he said about this game, man, I'm excited it's in September. He said, every year I go to Green Bay, it seems like every year I have to play him in December in Green Bay. He said, I looked at the weather. It reminded me of you. He said, it's supposed to be 81 degrees. So, like, Minnesota's obviously a cold, or Minneapolis, cold city, but they play indoors. So, like, the weather is an advantage to the Vikings just because the weather typically can be an advantage for the Packers because they're used to the inclement conditions. For all these and because you don't have Aaron Jones and because the Packers don't have another credible running threat and Aaron's not a credible running threat, you can play the bizarro defense the Cowboys are going to face. Cowboys, we talked about, they got 8 men in the box the entire game up against them. Man, if I'm the Vikings, I rush 4,
sometimes 3,
and drop 7, and just say we're not going to allow those quick hitters that let the Packers come back against the Bears, and we know how good you are.
And if you do that, you avoid some of the big plays. Nick, if you rush 3 or 4, you guys have to realize – there's 7 guys to 8 guys with 2 eyes on the football, right, that you can see and keep the defenders in front of you. Chicago, why'd they give up those 2 big plays? Playing man-to-man. Eyes aren't on the quarterback. Eyes are on the wide receiver. They missed a tackle, and guys run off for big gains. So that's a huge point that you're talking about, an advantage for the Vikings defense, because they don't have to play man-to-man. They can sit back in zone and key on the wide receivers.
And I would imagine, tell me if I'm wrong, sorry to interrupt, just quickly, those quick-hitting plays, like a quick slant, if you have a receiver that knows how to run his routes and get a good release, that works great against man-to-man.
Yes.
But against a zone...
8-yard gain.
Right. But against a zone, it's a lot more dangerous. Like, those quick hitters against a zone can be interceptions the other way. And so, usually, to beat a zone defense, you need to give your wide receivers time to get to the soft spots in the zone. Rodgers, if he's compromised, he has to get the ball out quickly. And we haven't even talked about the Vikings defenders.
Well, is it possible then that the Packers defense can keep them in this game then? I mean, Kirk Cousins is going up against Aaron Rodgers and the lore of the Green Bay Packers for the first time. I'm sure they're excited, but tell me about this Packers defense.
The Packers defense did play well in the second half of the game. They do have some draft capital they'd spent on the secondary. You could see Nick Perry, a player who's been there for several years, getting a rush at the end of the game. They haven't had a consistent rush like that. Couldn't get off the field on third downs. We saw that in the second half. But the Vikings offense, we feel to be better. And I feel where they will struggle is their linebackers trying to guard Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook, we only saw small sample size of him last year. Kind of one-dimensional as a back, a good runner, but not a great pass receiver, only 11 catches. We saw him catch 6 passes in the first week of the game. So you know their offensive coordinator, him and Kyle Rudolph, yep, I believe are the difference makers in this game going against those linebackers. Kyle threatening the seam routes and down the middle, and Dalvin Cook coming out of the backfield running swings and circle routes. So, yes, I think that they do have an advantage, but those two players, I believe, take advantage of it.
And if the Packers are going to win, the defense is going to have to play well. The Vikings, since the start of last season, they're 14-1 when they score at least 10 points. Like, the only way people have been able
to say that again.
They're 14-1 if they get to 10 points, not 20 points or 21 points. They get to 10 points, that they usually take care of it from there. One key matchup, if the Packers are going to win, the only soft spot on this entire Vikings team, offense or defense, I would say is a few spots on the offensive line. I think the Packers' best defender right now, even if he's unknown, is the first-round pick from 3 years ago, Kenny Clark, their nose tackle.
Yes,
Kenny Clark did a great job against Chicago, particularly in the second half. If Kenny Clark can take advantage of Brett Jones, the center, Tom Compton, the journeyman guard, then all of a sudden you can disrupt Kirk Cousins, you can disrupt Dalvin Cook. But there's not a lot of paths to victory for the Packers. There's a lot of different ones for the Vikings.
The training room is packed in Green Bay, too. Not only people worried about Aaron Rodgers, but you have to watch Devontae Adams, the wide receiver, hurt his shoulder in the Chicago game, hadn't practiced all week. He's a huge question mark, too. So Vikings defense going against a depleted or injured Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. I wore a purple tie for a reason.
Yeah, you did. All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, Jalen Ramsey says he's not scared of the Patriots, but should he be? That's next on First Things First. It's always a great time when USC takes on Texas. Check out the latest chapter in the rivalry tomorrow at 8 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Big game for both teams, man. Both these teams had lost. USC lost last week. Texas lost week one. Huge game.
Time for us to go viral. Over the course of his illustrious NBA career, Kobe Bryant was known for his relentless work ethic. Take a listen to this amazing story that gives you a glimpse into just how serious he was.
I don't care if we're in a great city of Chicago. You can't go out. We got to get rest. Right?
Back-to-back games.
Back-to-back games, yeah. Right? Monday, Tuesday. You play Monday and play again Tuesday. The guys aren't going to listen, right? You're gonna, you know.
Right.
So a few times, say, all right, we'll all go out. We'll go out together.
Really?
I'll drink with you, right? But the next morning, I'm banging on your door at 5 in the morning. Let's go.
They're not getting
Where are we going? I hung out with you. Now you come hang out with me.
Wow.
This is what we do. All right, let's go. And we're at the gym. We're working out, right? We hit the bus. We go to practice. We play that night.
And they're dead.
And they're dead. And they're like, lesson learned.
Really?
Lesson learned.
You take them out once.
Listen, if you're going to do that, do that. But don't let that compromise what we're here to do.
Right.
This is why we're here. This is why you're here in the first place.
Yeah.
Right?
And if we're going to win a championship, we have to have that championship mentality.
That's
and
it.
Work ethic.
That's it. So you got to show them, no, Kobe can do that and still has the energy to get up and do this. So either I got to meet that same energy or I got to keep my butt in my
room. Go to bed early, yeah.
Does that resonate with you?
Well, I mean, we always have stories like that. It's nice. There's certain days to drink on. Don't act like Kobe and NBA players don't hang out, though. I don't want people to take that. But lesson learned for younger players.
Consummate teammate and team leader Kobe Bryant. It's always what I've thought.
Well, sometimes you have to give it up. He did a lot of things now. You have to do a lot. You have to have a serious program to get to where he
was.
Oh,
and to play 20 years?
Oh,
no
yes.
doubt. I've never doubted how great Kobe was.
Yeah. Yes.
Never doubted that.
Still got a little.
There's just a little bit of career recreation going on these last couple of years with Kobe and his relationships with teammates. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Still scored more points than Mike. I ain't taking that from you, Kobe.
Where is he on the list?
What? He's eighth all time.
Time for some stories to start.
Greatest players, not scoring. Scoring, he's fourth all time.
Despite a very impressive debut for Sam Darnold, Jets head coach Todd Bowles says everybody should just pump the brakes. He says it was only one game. Bowles will tell you after 100 more whether Donald's good or not. You know, short leash. Jets take on the Dolphins Sunday. CeCe, how do you think he'll fare?
It's going to be a good football game. The Dolphins are much improved. Had a big game against the Titans in week number one. Their defense, especially their rushers, they're going to get after him. So they got to be able to have some balance like they did. If they get out of this game and he has less than 28 throws, he had 21 Monday night, oh, they're going to win the football game. If Dolphins force him to throw it 30 times, then I believe the game is up in the air. Sam Darnold, though, is a keeper, not a week one wonder.
Dolphins just announced, by the way, Josh Sitton. I don't know if they've announced, the story just broke. Josh Sitton's done for the year. I know you were saying they were very high on him, guard that they brought in. And so, listen, for Darnold, he's going to have another interception just like he had to start this game. I'm very curious to see, again, how he recovers from it. He obviously recovered from it perfectly in week one. I think we're going to have ebbs and flows with him, but a great week one performance.
All right, speaking of young quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson will try and bounce back from a tough week one loss when he takes on Tennessee. Texans head coach Bill O'Brien says he knows Watson will improve. The man has faith. Nick, does Watson have a bounce back game this week?
Well, he's not going to play worse than he played in week one. That was the worst game he's played. I mean, as a pro, the worst game. I don't think he ever played a game worse at Clemson. The worst game Deshaun Watson played in a long time. I'm very interested to watch this game because he did not look 100%. He looked like a guy who was still recovering from the knee injury he suffered in practice midway through last year. There were some holes that last year he would have exploded through, and he didn't. So I'm curious to watch that part of this game as well.
Well, he's got good film to watch because he's going to watch the Miami Dolphins and their wide receivers. Kenny Steele, in particular, took advantage of some pass coverage. coverage that the Titans had. So it's important, especially when you've been injured, that you have some early success. I thought him, Jimmy Garoppolo, both their numbers would come back. And I believe that we saw in week number one in Minnesota with Jimmy G, both of them things to be accurate.
Speaking of Jimmy G, to the West Coast now, two winless teams square off this weekend as former Patriot Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers take on former Patriot Matt Patricia and the Lions. One's got dates, the other's got a pencil and a laminated sheet, Nick. All right, Nick, who's got the advantage?
Listen, I think the Lions, bless you, Jenna, I think the Lions have more talent than the San Francisco 49ers, and that's just not really about all the talent the Lions have. It's about the lack of talent the Niners have. I think the Niners will have a decided schematic edge. I think Kyle Shanahan's the real deal at head coach. I am far less sold on Matt Patricia. This is a big game, though, for both these teams. Patricia trying to get his first NFL win. Shanahan trying to still show his team the way they ended last year has some relevance to this year.
Yeah, Matt Patricia, he can't accept the way they played, and more from an offensive standpoint. You can't turn the ball over in the NFL as much as they did and expect to win football games. So that's what he's going to have to deal with Matt Stafford. As far as the 49ers, I believe in Jimmy Garoppolo, but they don't have the wide receivers. I'm surprised that they haven't called for Dez Bryant. Who are they going to throw the ball to outside? I know his tight end's his favorite target, but how long will that last and how productive will it be?
All right, finally, Thursday Night Football. A.J. Green, as we mentioned, had a big night, catching three touchdowns in the first half as the Bengals beat the Ravens 34-23. See, what was your biggest takeaway from this game?
I like the fact that Andy Dalton was taking his reads and getting rid of the football. Good velocity. When Andy doesn't throw the ball deep down the field, he's got good velocity. He makes good reads on it. I felt like he was in control of the offense. And you got to feed A.J. Green. A.J. Green is not just a deep threat. I'm glad that they got the short passing game going with him to give him an opportunity that he could take advantage of the defense. He's a sensational player. I believe that we spend a lot of time talking about other guys who might be more glamorous, guys who are on Instagram. But A.J. Green's one of the best wide receivers, and he showed that with those three early touchdowns.
And what you also saw on the Ravens side of things, which not surprisingly, Nate Peterman and Josh Allen weren't able to take advantage of in week one, but they missed Jimmy Smith now.
Yes.
Jimmy Smith, best player in their secondary out the beginning of the season, and you saw A.J. Green and everybody really take full advantage of a weakened Ravens secondary. But I said this week, week one's confusing because we don't know what team to make something of from their first game. So Ravens-Bills, was it more about the Bills or are the Ravens going to bounce back from nearly making the playoffs to being a really good team? Right now, the early returns are that week one domination over Buffalo was more about Buffalo than about Baltimore.
And you can also see them missing Jimmy Smith. He's suspended, I think, for four games. But they lost C.J. Mosley early in that game.
Yes.
He's the best defender on that defense. You could see a couple simple plays, even a shallow cross that they scored on. C.J. Mosley would have made that tackle for a short game. So that part of their defense is going to have to be shored up with those two very, very talented defenders not being a part of it.
And then quickly, I wanted to ask you about Joe Flacco. I think we saw a much better Flacco in week one than we did in week two. What say did you get and what you're going to, you know, where are we going to go after this?
To me, Flacco's Flacco. Since they won the Super Bowl, this Ravens team's 41-41. Since they won the Super Bowl, of all passers in the NFL, he's dead last in yards per attempt. He's near the bottom in quarterback rating. There is a reason they drafted Lamar Jackson. Now, Lamar is far from being ready. And I thought Troy said something interesting during the broadcast, see, about Flacco and his feelings of having to come off the field and them having Lamar right there that I know you keyed on for watching the broadcast. But I don't expect much from Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
Week one, notwithstanding.
No quarterback wants to be in any type of rotation. Joe hasn't said anything about it, but Troy did point it out in the telecast that he wouldn't be happy with it. And when you are not manning the team, you're out playing wide receiver, you know you're not going to make a play out there. So it's not what a typical quarterback would want, so it's something that we must watch. But this game was about the defensive front. They have now laid their offensive line to the Ravens. Ravens, no type of running attack. You get one-dimensional, those are the results you're going to see.
Geno Atkins played an excellent game, which is not surprising from an excellent player.
All right, let's move on now. If you were a fan of last year's AFC Championship game between the Patriots and Jaguars, you're in luck. Part deux this weekend. Remember last year, Jacksonville almost upset the Patriots before Tom Brady started doing those Tom Brady-type things. Both teams currently sit at 1-0 heading into week two. And here's a shocker. Jalen Ramsey seems confident heading into this week's matchup.
I asked your defensive coordinator, if someone said Rob Gronkowski is overrated, what would you say to that person? He said he's crazy.
Might be crazy. I don't care.
People call him the best ever, and you're not going there. You're saying, I guess he's
good. He good now. We ain't gonna get it twisted. He's good, but you saying this to me, is it supposed to bring fear to me or something? Yeah. Like, all right then. I don't fear no man. Period.
Is as good as any defense will face all year. They got an incredible rush, great linebackers, great secondary. It's going to be very, very challenging, tough environment, and we'll see what made up.
All right, Nick, words. At the end of it, who's got the edge in this matchup?
Let me just say one thing about those words. It is interesting. Jalen's changed his tune on
just
Gronk
a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Gronk, he said he's good. Literally 2 weeks ago said Gronk's not that good. So at least on that one player, Jalen's changed his tune a bit. As far as who has the edge, I think the Pats have the edge. I was not impressed by Jacksonville in week one. I think you saw why some people are skeptical of them this season in week one, because even though they have the dominant defense and the defense might be nearly as good as it was last year, they still have Blake Bortles at quarterback. They have worse receiving options this year than they had last year. And Leonard Fournette, who was dinged up in college, was dinged up last season, got dinged up in week one. Their most potent rusher in their first week's game was Blake Bortles. And Bortles, by the way, needs to be an enormous part of this game plan running the football for them to be able to move the ball against New England. But I think Jacksonville's best chance to beat the Patriots was in that AFC Championship game when they have a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter and they were not able to take advantage. I know that this game's a pick 'em in Vegas. I think I would be very surprised if the Pats don't win this football game.
The Pats have a huge advantage because offensively they don't have to press. And the reason why, because they know the other quarterback over there and his limitation. So even early in the game, just don't have any turnovers. So I believe the Pats' offense, they have an advantage because they can be patient. Jags' defense, they need to score on defense.
Yeah.
They were not. If they said they're going to grow their playbook from last year's playoff success that they had, they didn't do it in week number one. Maybe they're going to surprise us. They surprised us last year in the championship game. The way they came out, the way they attacked them, throwing the ball down the middle of the field to their fullback, popping the tight end out after a strong play action in the red zone to get a score. So are they going to do some things to change? If they do that, then they might be able to have a good chance. But I don't see that. They don't trust Blake Bortles, the wide receivers. Explosive plays, where do they come from? Because you know you're going to have to score to be able to beat New England. So advantage to Pat's offense.
Well, and the wide receiver issue is a real one. Allen Robinson.
Well, yeah, I mentioned them.
No, I get it. I just want to elaborate on it. Like, Allen Robinson walks out the door. Allen Hurns walks out the door. Marquise Lee tears up his knee in the preseason. So
you are going to have a problem if you thought Marquise Lee was going to be your number one guy anyway.
Yeah.
There is at no point in his pro career he's been a one or a two. So now you're going to move him up from a 3 or 4 to a 1. It was going to be an issue.
And so you're talking Dante Moncrief and Keelan Cole as your starting wide receivers for a team that already has a very limited quarterback. And so, yeah, you said they're going to have to score on defense. That's why they beat the Giants. They lose to the Giants if they don't score on defense. I think it was 7 possessions in the second half against the Giants. Punt, 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 punt. And they won the game because of that pick six. And by the way, they'd have won that Pats game. They thought they scored on defense in the AFC Championship game. I think, in fairness, they kind of did score on defense. They're up 10. It's in the fourth quarter. The Pats run a trick play, and Miles Jack right here, if you remember it, that's a strip and going the other way, and they blew it dead. But there is no Patriot that's catching him there. That play right there doesn't get blown dead. The Jags are going to the Super Bowl there, but they did. And to me, that was their chance. Like, that was their best chance. And I think the Pats are probably the best team in the AFC. I think the Jags are going to be fighting for a playoff spot in the AFC. So I don't look at this as a super close matchup the way I think a lot of people do.
If Jalen Ramsey can somehow quiet or negate or slow down Gronk, can you squint and see a way for this Jags defense to at least do something with a somewhat limited Patriots offense?
Oh, yeah, because if they can get some pass pressure, especially between the guard and center, you can't rely on steady pressure to be on the edge because Brady is able to avoid that, step up in the pocket. But if they can do what Brandon Graham did in the Super Bowl, If they can create pressure between the center and the guard gaps, then yes, there is a way. This is a good defense. I don't believe it's going to be a blowout. I believe it's going to be a close game.
This is, see, I think it was last year you were talking about when's the time the Patriots lose a game because they don't get to 17 points. I think I mentioned something. It might have even been leading up to this game. And you said, you just got to remind me. You got to show me the time that the Pats, we saw it happen to them, oddly enough, in a couple Super Bowl losses where their offense was really limited by the Giants. But typically, they're not losing a game because the offense gets totally stalled out.
No.
That's why it's, to me, such a tough matchup for Jacksonville. You got to get to 21. I think Jacksonville has to get to 21, and if they don't get that defensive score, I don't think they have enough of a potent offense to get there, especially without Leonard. We don't even know if go
right.
Ahead.
So Leonard Fournette is a game time decision heading into Sunday. I mean, what does that do for the Jags' chances? See,
to me, I thought Leonard Fournette. I thought he was going to be a better pro than what he was. I thought that I thought they'd be more creative. Well, it's almost impossible to be less creative than the people at LSU in the way they use them. But the Jags, they're trying. I just wish they would come up with something creative because I believe he is a talent, but he's got to be used the right way. And you have to be able to try to use him as a wide receiver. He came back this year. He's lost some weight. He's having a hamstring problem. He hurt himself in the Giants game. But lack of creativity, you are not going to be a big banging back in the NFL for long. We saw DeMarco Murray retire after this season. Nick, how many seasons did he play?
Played 8 years?
You swore up and down he had played 10, 12, 11 years. Like, this guy's been around. I said, no, they don't last long. So with Fournette, yes, he's a good player. But the lack of creativity with him in that offense, to me, it's hard for them to be an elite team when they don't have an explosive offense.
And in Fournette's defense, when the other team is not scared of your quarterback at all and not scared of your wide receivers at all, they are going to jam the box and say, okay, Leonard Fournette, beat us. And he doesn't have that elite playmaking that Zeke or Saquon has. What he has is he's almost always the biggest, strongest guy on the football field.
Until he got to the NFL.
Exactly right. And so that's how he dominated at LSU was. He was bigger and stronger than everybody. So even when they jammed the box against the non-creative LSU offense, he could run through people. That's a hell of a lot tougher for him right now. It's why he was under 4 yards per carry last year.
They are going to watch him with that hamstring, and he will be a game-time decision. All right, take a break. Coming up, can Cam Newton and the Panthers take down Matty Ryan and those Falcons? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with Super Bowl champ Chris Canty joining the show.
All right.
What's going on, Chris?
Nothing much. We got another Football Friday, Jenna.
Week two. We got a lot of them coming up. All right. This is a big one in the NFC South. Panthers and Falcons. Both these teams suffered tough injuries this week, with the Panthers losing Greg Olsen and the Falcons losing Deion Jones. But the Panthers are coming off a win over Dallas. Falcons are coming off a loss to the Eagles. Despite the tough start, Matt Ryan says Atlanta is ready for a very familiar opponent. Take a listen.
We know these guys well. They know us well. And I really believe that, you know, these in-division games come down to, you know, when you get your chances, whether it's 5-6 plays in a game, you have your opportunity, you know, to make the explosive play, to score a touchdown. You got to take advantage of that.
Very familiar with this team. Certain things that they've done. They've added a couple of wrinkles in this offseason that I've seen on film. But at the end of the day, they are who they are, and they're a good team. We know that. And we're a good team, too. So it's just going to come down to the team who execute best and protect the football.
The most conservative I've ever seen Cam Newton dressed in my entire life. Barely recognized him. All right, what is going to be the key to this matchup, Chris Caney?
Well, for me, it's going to be about Matt Ryan being able to make those throws outside of the numbers. Last week, Carolina Panthers played against a quarterback that couldn't do that consistently, throwing the ball down the field outside of the numbers. The Panthers defensively want to be a single high team. They're going to drop an extra defender down in the box to slow down that running game. That's why they have an NFL best 21-game streak of holding opposing not allowing an opposing rusher to have over 100 yards. So that's what that defense is going to do. That's what Ron Rivera's guys, that's their identity. So what Matt Ryan is going to have to do, he's going to have to be good at being able to get the ball to Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu, take advantage of that young secondary of the Carolina Panthers. Now, on the flip side of it, when you look at what Cam Newton is going to have to do, they've got a patchwork offensive line. Darrell Williams, their other starting tackle, is out now. So now they're down both of their starting tackles based on their preseason depth chart. So it's a patchwork group. They're going to have to rely on him to be more of a runner on the offensive side of the ball. because I don't think that that group can hold up in pass protection. In 14 career games against the Falcons, Cam Newton's been sacked 22 times, 18 touchdowns to 15 picks.
To me, this is a game of who
can deal with information.
It's a lot of information. This
is, to me,
this is a game of who can deal with their injuries the best. Because both of these teams, as you alluded to on the Panthers side, you talked about they lost their left tackle before the season. They lost their right tackle during week one. They lost their tight end, Greg Olsen, during week one, who's Cam's favorite target. And then you have the Falcons, who during week one lost speed on their speedy defense. They lost their strong safety, Deion Jones and Keanu Neal. They lost their strong safety and middle linebacker, I should say, in week one. And so what you're going to have is, like, I know the Panthers are going to say, let's try to get the ball, shock, to Christian McCaffrey and see if their backup middle linebacker, who's, Chris, you were telling me, is an Ivy Leaguer. I'm not familiar with the guy.
Yes.
Foye Side Oluokun, who's going to step
Nailed.
In.
Pick from Yale.
That's a good effort, by the way.
I'm doing my best. I try to get people's name right. So if he can, how they can tackle Christian McCaffrey in space, and whether or not the Panthers receivers, who they've spent multiple high round picks on year after year, can attack a weaker Atlanta secondary. And on the flip side, the story for Atlanta until further notice is going to be, at least on my in my eyes, how good are they in the red zone? That was their problem last year. We know that's why they lost week one. They said all offseason they were working on it. We didn't see it in week one. Maybe week one was an aberration. Philadelphia just has their number. But I want to see how Atlanta does once they get inside the 20. I don't doubt they'll be able to move the ball to the red zone. Do they get seven once they get in the red zone? They were 1 for 5 in 5 red zone opportunities against Philadelphia, only coming away with 10 total points.
Yeah, I think they made a huge mistake by trying to go for it to open the game. You have the opening drive of the season. You drive all the way down the field. You get inside the 5-yard line, and you decide to go for it on fourth down, where the momentum of it was, he was coaching like this is his first game coaching. Mm-hmm. DQ, Dan Quinn, that's what they call him. He should know better. He should get them 3 points because that's still momentum for your team. So they turn it over there on downs. They get the ball back. They go right back down inside the 5-yard line. So for me, you're talking about red zone offense. I'm talking about the relationship between Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, and Matty Ice and Julio Jones. All right? They got to get Julio Jones the ball in the red zone. It's impossible, Jenna. It's impossible to complete a pass to Julio Jones when he's sitting on the sideline.
Yeah.
So you actually do the defense a favor by taking him off the field. Randy Moss used to have a fit when they used to take him off the field. I used to tell you guys, listen, just have him stand out there.
he can get a breather just standing
I said,
there.
Just let him stand out there. Don't take it off. Don't go no 3 tight ends, 4 tight ends. What advantage? It's advantage to the defense because one of the most feared weapons is on the sideline. So that relationship becomes important. For Cam Newton, it's about third down conversions. It's one of those kind of games, I don't care how many times they throw. I don't care how many times he's run. Cam's going to have to be able to try to win this with that patched up offensive line and that group that he has. So he's going to have to, it's going to be a Cam Newton game when they travel to Atlanta this weekend.
Is this going to be a bigger running game, a bigger workload, at least that in that direction for Cam Newton without his favorite target, Greg Olsen, out there?
Well, yeah, that's why I think Cam Newton is going to have to be a big part of that running game. They've got to find a way to shorten the game just because they're shorthanded along the offensive line.
You cannot back him up with those backup lines.
But that's exactly what I was about to say, CC. Those offensive linemen are better going forward than they are going backwards in pass protection. So that's why I think this is another game where Cam Newton ends up being the Panthers' leading rusher. But looking at the flip side with the Atlanta Falcons, they got to find a way to win this game. They can't afford to go down and start 0-2 on the season, especially with 2 NFC losses. This is a team that has championship aspirations. And we know that if you start the season 0-2, you got around a 10% chance of making the postseason. So it has been done before, but that's not how Dan Quinn wants to start this season, especially knowing how last season ended. So they're going to have a little more urgency going back to their place, having this game against a division rival. They got to get this win. They need it more than the Carolina Panthers.
And Julio Jones has historically dominated this team. Julio, in the last 3 years, going into this year, 6 games played, averages 140 yards receiving a game. He has a 300-yard game against this team. He's got a 170 against this team. Last year, final week of the year, he had 80. The time before, he had 120. But to speak to the red zone stuff, Julio Jones, 6 games, averaging 140, had a 300-yard game. two total touchdowns in that stretch. Like, for, and that has been red zone or not red zone, for some reason, that is the only part of his football resume that is not top of the league level production since he came into the league. The touchdown scored. As far as the Panthers and their offense, quickly here, we talked about the Cowboys' lack of big plays when they played the Panthers. Didn't have a single play over 20 yards. Mm-hmm. Panthers only had one. They had one Cam Newton run that was greater than 20 yards. They didn't have a single pass play greater than 20 yards. Nobody else ran for greater than 20 yards. I know Atlanta's going to have some explosive plays against that Panthers secondary. Can Carolina have just a few big plays to try to even that score a bit?
All right, Chris, stick around. We've got to take a quick break. Coming up, can a hobbled Aaron Rodgers beat the dominant Vikings defense all by his lonesome? That's next on First Things First. He might have to. On Sunday, we've got a great slate of NFL action headlined by Kirk Cousins and the Vikings going to Lambeau Field, where the Packers hope to have Aaron Rodgers at the helm, only on Fox and only in the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area. All right, sticking with that game with Chris Caney, Rodgers missed practice again on Thursday as he continues to recover from his sprained knee. Caney, you know and I know Rodgers can play this whole weekend without practicing at all. Okay. Why would he want to? What's going on behind
Nothing.
Me? Perhaps
going.
It's his opponent, the Vikings, arch rivals, and the team which knocked him out for most of the season last year. But Mike McCarthy says playing Sunday's no layup. He's still day-to-day. All right, Chris, who's got the advantage in this matchup, assuming Aaron Rodgers plays?
Well, I'm going to say it's the Minnesota Vikings because you're dealing with Aaron Rodgers that's not healthy. His mobility is going to be compromised. And one of the things that makes Aaron Rodgers an elite quarterback is his ability to extend plays, buy time, get outside of the pocket, and then allow those receivers to uncover downfield. So the Minnesota Vikings, they're not going to see that version of Aaron Rodgers. This is diet Aaron Rodgers. It ain't the full Aaron Rodgers. And so when you know that as a defender, especially a defensive lineman, you don't have to be as disciplined in your rush lanes. You can get after it. And one of the things that we saw in that Minnesota game against the 49ers was the interior pressure that that Vikings defensive line was able to apply. Mike Zimmer made it a point in his weekly press conference to praise what he got from Sheldon Richardson, his ability to be able to collapse the interior of that pocket. And if you've got a quarterback that can't move, guess what? That's not a good combination. Right. So when you think about Hunter and Griffin coming off of the edges and then Sheldon Richardson being on the interior, that's a big problem for this Packers offensive line and for Aaron Rodgers. So I definitely got to say it's advantage Minnesota Vikings.
I know Mike McCarthy, he's not looking forward to the game plan. And we're here on Friday. Davante Adams, number one wide receiver, he hadn't practiced. He's got a bad shoulder. And, of course, Aaron hadn't been there. So coming up with a game plan with no running game, what's their attack? What are they going to do? At the tight end, they got Jimmy Graham. He can't block on a regular basis, so he don't want to get his nose bloody going against. This is a huge advantage for me going against the Vikings defense, a Vikings defense that's very familiar with Aaron. And one thing you always talk about with the Vikings, they don't get enough attention. They have the all-pro players on all levels, but those interior guys on the defense and what they did to San Francisco. And Hunter talked about after the game, Jimmy Garoppolo had the look as if, I don't want to get hit anymore.
Yeah.
You can believe Aaron. Aaron, he wants to play in this game, but no quarterback I've ever met wants to get hit. And when you can't avoid, when you can't protect yourself, you know, this is Aaron's in more danger in this game than he was in last week's game where he came back into the game.
And Danielle Hunter coming off the edge, no player in the league in week one, had more pressures on a quarterback. He had 8. Yeah. And Sheldon Richardson coming up the middle, he had 7. So you've got the most and then tied for the second most of two guys on the same defensive line. But I want to get back. You mentioned earlier, Jenna, Aaron doesn't need to practice to play, and I agree with you on that. But I want to ask both of you this, and see, I'll start with you, because you've talked about not only the importance of practice, but when we've talked about teams' quarterback depth charts, how much better you can get in practice depending on who your backup quarterback is. Mm-hmm. Well, the corollary to that is, how effective can the Packers' practices have been this week? There's no Aaron Rodgers. There's no Davante Adams. The quarterbacks practicing for him are Kaiser and Tim Boyle. Are they getting as much done in practice this week that they need to, even if Rodgers is ready to go?
This is the thing. This is not a great week for that sample size. Mm-hmm. But because Kirk Cousins is not real mobile and because Kirk Cousins doesn't have a huge cannon of an arm, you can simulate what they're doing with Kaiser. But over the course of the week, No, your offense is not running the same. The reason why a lot of coaches are comfortable at the beginning of the game is because those first 15 plays, which Green Bay does script, it's because you have your starters in there. Your quarterback's told you, I don't like that one. I do like this one. If they play this one, I do like this coverage. So that part right there, I don't believe will be as well because of the lack of practice time and those backup guys being in there. Those first 15 plays that we have seen teams be very, very successful with, I believe it will be affected by not having your starter, Nick, in practice this week.
And the other part of that, CeCe, when you talk about the quality of practice, this is a division rivalry. So there aren't a whole lot of state secrets between the two teams. They know each other very well. I know Kirk Cousins is new, but in terms of the concepts that Mike Zimmer feels comfortable with on the offensive side of the ball, even though they have a new offensive coordinator, I mean, it's still pretty much the same. His football philosophy has not changed. But when I look at the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, he has to be out there on that field because this is a division game at home. And if you look at this, you're probably saying that the division is going to come down to these two teams. You can't afford to lose both games, both your home game and your road game to the Minnesota Vikings. So there's got to be more urgency for the Packers in terms of trying to win this football game. And to me, that signals that Aaron Rodgers will be out there, even if he is physically compromised.
Well, I'm going to tell you in a second why I don't think he's going to be out there and what signals to me he won't be. But as far as, like, the Packers, if you were to, let's say Rodgers were 100%, and you were going into the year, what's the home game they're most likely to lose? I would have picked this one. I think the Vikings are, without question, one of the three most complete teams in football, arguably the best. It's the Philly when Wentz gets back. We were talking about this during the break. Philly, the Rams, and the Vikings, you guys can argue on the order about the three most complete teams in football. They don't have their starting running back, Aaron Jones, this week. He's suspended. Davante Adams is not practicing right now. They don't have a weather edge in this game because it's supposed to be 80 degrees. They're getting them in September instead of in December. I know when the Packers see the Vikings on the schedule, I know they're hoping. Let's have the game in Minnesota be early and the game in Green Bay be late because then you have the edge. But I just looked during the break. You right now this moment can bet on this football game and the Vikings are 6-point favorites. That is telling, like, that's no longer just a line that's out there. It's a line you can put money on. Vegas is telling you they do not think Aaron Rodgers is playing. Now, maybe he should, maybe you want him to play. I want him to play if he doesn't, if he's not compromised. But if you think he's going to play, you can make some money on it. Because if he plays, that line will be a pick'em or Packers minus one. It's right now Vikings minus six, and that's some. So Vegas is telling you what they think's going to happen.
If he does play, let's just not forget what he did last week. Nobody here would have thought he would have come back, mounted that comeback, hobbled, injured, with Khalil Mack playing the way he did in the first half, and somehow he did it. Granted, he's still at a disadvantage, but I'm throwing that out there. But my question to you, Candy, is can this Packers defense keep them in the game long enough to at least give their offense a chance to put up points?
Well, I think it remains to be seen. We don't know what the Green Bay Packers defense is going to be this year. I don't think we have high expectations for that group. We can see that Aaron Rodgers can make the game tilt because they can score so many points when he's healthy that that defense, in large part, is playing against a one-dimensional offense. The opposing teams are trying to play catch-up by throwing the ball. But when you're going up against a balanced attack from the Minnesota Vikings, a team that wants to run the football, but they can also push the ball down the field in the passing game, I think this is a challenge that is going to be tough for this Packers defense. Just personnel-wise, I don't think they match up well against this Vikings offense.
Packers defense don't know what it is. First half, Chicago was very, very successful. They had some nice concepts against them, ran the ball and even threw the ball effectively against the defense. Second half, when Aaron and that offense needed some stops, they were able to get the stops and get off the field. In the playoffs, Aaron didn't get that support. So it looks like some of their draft capital on their defensive secondary, their defense secondary is more athletic. So they should be better. And we saw in the Bears game, when they needed it, late in the third quarter, fourth quarter, they were able to get those stops and give Aaron them the ball back. So I do believe they're much improved. The Vikings just can't turn the football over. Lambeau Field is not a place we've had a lot of success playing, so that's something that is real in the Vikings. But I believe they're going to get after Aaron. And if Aaron wants to play in this football game, they're not going to treat him the way Chicago did. Chicago didn't blitz the second half. You can believe Zim is going to put some pressure on Aaron. So I think it's a bigger ask of Aaron this week.
And Chicago's had an underrated defense last year. They draft Roquan Smith. They add Khalil Mack. That is a very good defense. It is not the Minnesota Vikings. Last year, the Vikings and the Jags were first and second, second and first in every single major defensive statistical category. And the Vikings, they didn't get worse this offseason. In fact, they added Sheldon Richardson. Richardson, right? Like, yep. they no significant losses. They added a first-round pick in Mike Hughes.
Yep,
like
UCF.
Strength on strength. And so, to answer your question, Jenna, about the Packers' defense, watch Kenny Clark. Third-year player, nose tackle. The one soft spot on the entire Vikings team is the interior of the offensive line.
Don't like when you use that word, soft.
Okay, well.
But it's true. That's the thing. You don't know what Kenny Clark is.
No. I'm saying the soft spot on the Vikings is the interior of their offensive line. I think Kenny Clark, the nose tackle for the Packers, can take advantage in that spot.
Yeah.
Here's how you figure out who's going to win.
I know you don't like me calling D linemen soft. Ooh, I've learned my lesson on that. I mean, come on.
SOF capital T.
Purple tie, Chris Canty. Purple tie right there.
That's how we know the Vikings.
Viking Friday. That's how you know the Vikings. Thursday night football, big night for A.J. Green, breaking away for a 32-yard touchdown. You said he was going to have a big season, Nick and CC.
Oh, check it out now. They moved A.J. Green to the slot. He's been playing predominantly his whole career outside. Check it out. Slot, 2 touchdowns in the red zone. Hey, Julio Jones, Atlanta, maybe y'all want to look at the Bengals and what they're doing with A.J.
3 touchdowns for 17 minutes of this game for A.J. Green. Our poor stage manager, Joe, up against him in fantasy. Hold that L, Joe.
Not yet.
Shout, not yet. Hold that L, Joe.
Same game now. John Brown catching a touchdown. Watch the tight coverage.
Man, your guy Larry told us about him, see?
John Brown started his career with the Arizona Cardinals, made some big plays early in his career, couldn't stay healthy. Now in Baltimore, he's their number one deep threat. Great throw by Flacco.
This is the best throw Flacco made all night. And Dre Kirkpatrick, that's unlucky, man. That's excellent coverage and a hell of a play by John Brown. Look at where Kirkpatrick is. He even gets his hand on it. That's a hell of a play.
Perfect throw.
All right, up in Canada here, University of Guelph. This is Kian Schaefer-Baker. With a ridiculous one-handed nab.
This is the best I've seen this season. Had to go north of the border to get it.
Takes a lot, Chris.
Speared it. Man, what a great catch.
He got that with his fingertips, man.
Yeah, that's how you catch a football, man. Thumb, index finger, other fingers grip it. Yeah, don't use your palm, man. And palms aren't good for nothing. Use your fingertips, buddy. Fingertips. That's why you do the fingertip push-ups, Holmes.
Finally, Melissa High School in Texas, Chase Mapp somehow manages to tip the ball to himself, makes a nice touchdown catch.
That's a great catch.
Awesome, guys.
I'm sorry to see just passionately saying palms aren't good for nothing. Sounds like a preacher in the 50s.
Yeah, you can't catch it with your chest. Don't catch it with your chest, son. Catch it with your fingertips.
This young man got a little lucky here, but it's a hell of a play.
Right. Catch it with your fingertips. Throw it with your fingertips.
Eagles and Bucks this weekend. Battle of the backups in this one. Nick Foles makes his second start of the year. As he leads the defending Super Bowl champs down to Tampa, he will face another longtime backup. Ryan Fitzpatrick will try and follow up his 400-yard, 4-touchdown performance from week 1. Fitzpatrick thinks he can keep the Fitz magic alive.
You know, I'm better right now than I've been at any point in my career, and a lot of that is just mentally and whatever else. But, you know, there's a lot of different throws and things that are so much ingrained in you, so much muscle memory from working and doing it for a long time that truly, like, I feel like the older I've gotten, the better I've become.
So it makes sense, right? He has been doing it a long time from that position, and eventually you want to say, it's all by rote. Like, I know what I'm doing. I've been in this situation before. But will the Eagles defense reveal who the real Ryan Fitzpatrick is, Nick?
I mean, I think so. I have to say I like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I covered him when I lived in Houston. He was one of the dozen mediocre Texans quarterbacks they had before they got Deshaun Watson. And Ryan Fitzpatrick had a really good year in 2015 for the Jets. He was able to put together multiple consecutive good games. But since then, I looked it up this morning. Since then, he's played 21 games. 6 of those games, he's been really good. 100-plus rating. He has been bad the next week. Every single time. He had a 6 interception game one of those weeks following that 120 quarterback rating. He doesn't have a single week following a great game with what you would even call a good game, better than 90 quarterback rating. He's got an 18 rating, a 30 rating, a 39 rating. Like, over the last few years, he has not shown the ability to do this in consecutive weeks. And that's just against a random sampling of defenses. Now it's against one of the very best defenses in football and a game that I think they're going to have to score because I don't trust the Bucs defense. The Bucs defense did just allow 40 points. We're focused on the 48, but they did just allow 40. I like his weapons. I like D-Jack and Mike Evans, but yeah, I think we're going to get more of why Ryan Fitzpatrick's a backup quarterback this week than we got in week one.
You talked to Kyle Rudolph this week on your radio program,
right? I did, yes, sir.
And what did he say about Green Bay?
He said being happy that it was that they were playing in September, it was 80 degrees, that they weren't going there in the winter.
Eagles, they haven't played good football all season. They did not have a good training camp. Now, they didn't lose any of their frontline players, which you would call bad training camp. You lose a few guys. They didn't play good football. You remember how bad they looked against the Cleveland Browns? And you know what we said? Ah, they'll be okay. No, they haven't been okay. They should have lost opening night. Atlanta Falcons, if they get some positive points early in that football game, they should have won that game. They had a chance at the end of the game, throwing it to the end zone again. So I believe this is the game that they're able to set their anchor and say, man, we're going to get this season turned around and play some good football. Because it's important how well you play. And I believe defensively, they're going to get after Fitzpatrick. And Fitzpatrick's biggest problem is, yeah, he thinks he's as good as his best game. But he's not that good. He never has any type of caution. Always throws the ball in the traffic. And he doesn't have the biggest arm. But, you know, he has that type of confidence that every five or six games, he's going to have a good game. But this defense, they are going to put a lot of pressure on him. They're going to blitz him, and they don't have a running attack there in Tampa. So that's my concern for him. If they get one-dimensional early in Philadelphia, man, teams love going to Tampa to be able to play early in the season.
Absolutely. That's why you're asking about.
So that's the reason why teams love going to Tampa. It's going to be a good football game. This is the game the Eagles get on track.
And just real quick on Fitzpatrick before we move on, the point Chris made that is the key one is the reason Ryan Fitzpatrick has more great games than a typical backup quarterback is the same exact reason why he will lose you more games by himself than a typical backup quarterback. He does have the mentality. Maybe it's that Harvard ego that comes with that degree, Ivy League degree. I don't know. But that, oh, I can do this. And sometimes it's flowing. And you saw him not only have a great game with his arm week one. Man, the Saints were within eight. It was a long third down, and Fitzy runs up the left side, goes down in bounds, wins the game. He's fired up. But that's also why he will give the game away about one every four starts. Like, that's what his history is.
You made a great point. You said Fitzpatrick thinks he's as good as his best game. He thinks that's his average. Well, I think Eagles fans are praying that Nick Foles is who he was when he played in the Super Bowl because he hasn't been that way in the preseason. He certainly wasn't that way in the first game. I don't know if we're really going to see that Nick Foles again.
Oh, I think Eagles fans are just praying Nick Foles isn't as bad as he was before the NFC Championship game and since the Super Bowl. I don't think Eagles fans think they need, until Wentz gets back, that A-plus out-of-body experience Nick Foles. They just don't need should-I-leave-football Nick Foles. Because that's the Nick Foles we got in the preseason. People say don't overreact to the preseason. The Eagles' first-team offense didn't generate one touchdown. Like, it's not just he didn't throw for a touchdown. Their first-team offense didn't generate a touchdown. They could not move the ball effectively against Atlanta. Like, I don't think they need Foles to be great. But Foles can lose you a game as well by just total lack of productivity. Not a multitude of turnovers, but I think it was under 4 yards per attempt the first week of the year. That's highly problematic.
And they were bad on third down. Nick Foles was great when he had the RPOs and he had Alshon Jeffries. Do they bring more of the RPOs back, the run-pass options for Nick Foles, which he was very, very successful. I think in the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, the RPOs, he was 10 for 10. We always talked about the numbers, what he did on third down. So Nick Foles got to get back on track. All right? The Super Bowl, all that stuff is over with.
Over.
They need to be more explosive, and they need to take some chances throwing the ball down the field, the same way they attacked the Vikings in that championship.
And the Eagles got away with one in week one. And credit to them, because that's going to matter at the end of the year. When they're fighting for home field, it's going to matter a ton. That was in their Eagles' history, the history of franchise, six times in the first week of the year, they've been held under 240 yards of offense. They were 0-5. They just won a game with less than 240 yards of offense. That's not duplicable week over week.
You hear that, Carson Wentz?
Yeah, come back.
Okay.
They need you.
Make sure you're watching. Coming up, how worried should Big Ben be about keeping pace with the Chiefs? Next on First and First. Time now for stories to start your morning Thursday night football. A.J. Green had a big night. He got three touchdowns in the first half as the Bengals beat the Ravens 34-23. CeCe, what was your biggest takeaway from this game?
A.J. Green, pretty good.
Yeah.
And you know something? Andy Dalton, man, he gets a lot of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like his arm strength might be a little bit better, or he's just getting the ball out quicker. I don't know what it is, Nick.
The criticism on Andy Dalton, it's a good point, because this offseason I said Andy Dalton is underrated. And that's not because I think he's very good. It's because people act he's terrible.
Yes.
Andy Dalton is not terrible. He's adequate. But people, maybe it's because the limited play.
Maybe big game situation.
On nationally televised games, he's been awful. He's never won a playoff game. Like, those are all fair criticisms. But I want to talk about the Ravens side of this just for a moment. They beat the brakes off Buffalo. We didn't know if that was more about Buffalo or Baltimore. It sure looks like it was more about Buffalo.
Where does your boy Colin have them ranked in his blazing? What is that thing he does?
Hierarchy.
What'd he have?
He had him number two, but he sent out an amendment last night saying he's going to have to adjustment. Don't you be shooting strays at my guy Colin.
Gosh.
I will defend my guy Colin. Listen, man, he did a weekly power rankings. Those have to be adjusted based on, with new information, I can adjust my opinion. A smart man taught me that.
A lot of sucking up going on around here.
What do you mean?
They're going to have to keep me around here if we're going to talk football.
Despite a very impressive debut for Sam Darnold, Jets head coach Todd Bowles says everybody should just pump the brakes. He says it was only one game, and he'll tell you after 100 more whether Darnold's good or not. Jets take on the Dolphins on Sunday. CeCe, how do you think he'll fare in that one?
Coach saying, give me that Gruden deal. That's what he's saying. Give me 6 years because that's it, the 100 games. I expect Sam Darnold to continue. What we have to be careful is how we judge him, because the Jets are going to be in great shape if he has less than 28 throws, 21 on Monday night. So let's judge it on that. Are they going to run the ball? Are they going to help? Are they going to create some turnovers? Because that defense is going to continue to be outstanding. Then that will protect a young quarterback. That's what we've seen in the history of the league.
And this is a sneaky big game. In the AFC East, like, when we're trying to find wild card teams, there's not going to be three awful teams in the AFC East. We know Buffalo's bad.
Yes.
Miami and the Jets both start off a bit of a surprising 1-0. They're both slight underdogs in their first game of the year. So let's getting out to 2-0. You'll be at worst tied for first in the division. Nobody thinks either one of these teams can contend with New England, but can they contend with Cincinnati? Can they contend with the other teams that are going for the AFC wild card spot? That's something to watch.
All right, speaking of young quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson will try and bounce back from a tough week one loss when he takes on Tennessee. Texans head coach Bill O'Brien says he knows Watson will improve. The man seems to have faith. Nick, does Watson have a bounce back game this week?
He's not going to be worse, but his offensive line got worse. Going into the year, I said I thought it might be the worst offensive line in a few years in the NFL. And they lost their starting tackle, Shontrell Henderson, to the season 2 injury. They don't have a reliable running game. They need Deshaun to do everything for them offensively. Now, they've got excellent wide receivers, and they have Will Fuller in week one, and their connection last year was special. But Deshaun didn't look healthy to me. He didn't look 100%. Let me put it like that. It didn't look like he was back to being what he was last year. If he's healthier, he'll have a bounce-back game.
No, he definitely will improve in week number two. He admitted he made some mistakes that he typically wouldn't make, but also going against the Titans team, the Dolphins had some success through the air last week against them.
Absolutely.
All right, finally, another really big week two game this weekend. This is in the NFC South. Panthers and the Falcons, both teams suffered tough injuries this week, with the Panthers losing Greg Olsen and the Falcons losing Deion Jones. But Matt Ryan thinks his Falcons are ready for a very familiar opponent.
We know these guys well. They know us well. And I really believe that, you know, these in-division games come down to, you know, when you get your chances, whether it's 5-6 plays in a game, you have your opportunity, you know, to make the explosive play, to score a touchdown. You got to take advantage of that.
Very familiar with this team. Certain things that they've done. They've added a couple of wrinkles in this offseason that I've seen on film. But at the end of the day, they are who they are, and they're a good team. We know that. And we're a good team, too. So it's just going to come down to the team who execute best and protect the football.
Everyone's a good team. Which team is more good? Nick, what is the key to this matchup?
Which team can deal with their injuries the best? Or maybe the better way to put it, which team can exploit the other team's injuries the best? Can the Panthers take advantage of the Falcons losing their starting strong safety, who I believe to be the best player in their secondary, and their starting middle linebacker, who I believe to be the best player in their linebacking core, and certainly the guy that adds the most speed to their linebacking core? They lost Keanu Neal and Deion Jones. Can the Panthers exploit that with horizontal passes, getting the ball in Christian McCaffrey's hands, having him make people miss in space? Flip side, can the Falcons take advantage of the fact that the Panthers didn't have their left tackle before the year, lost their right tackle in week one, and if someone's going to help out a backup tackle blocking, it's the tight end in Greg Olsen. He is out as well. Can the Falcons put pressure on Cam Newton, force him, we know, under duress? Cam's accuracy is spotty in a perfect pocket. Under duress, it can get really bad. So who can exploit the other team's week one losses? Because if you were to ask me which two teams dealt with the most substantial injuries in week one, it's the two teams playing each other in week two.
Cam is going to have to be spectacular. You talk about the injury to Olsen, him being out. How do they get third downs going against this nickel and dime defense with these backup players? Right now, you're going to have to play with backup. Cam's playing with his backup players. He's trying to attack backup players on that Atlanta defense that's going to be undersized. How many first downs can they generate? And the pressure is on the Atlanta Falcons. They should have won week number one in Philadelphia. They got New Orleans coming in week number three. They can't afford to go at 0-2. Look for them to try to get Julio Jones involved in the game. He's dominated going against Carolina in the last several years. Yeah, don't go to three or four tight ends when you get in the red zone. Not real, real bright, Sark. All right, he's the offensive coordinator. And the overall continuity between Sark in his second years as a coordinator and Matty Ice. Matty Ice put up unbelievable numbers with Kyle Shanahan. Kyle gone to San Francisco. Sark, in his second year as a coordinator, said that's all they worked on was red zone offense this offseason. Didn't pay dividends in week number one in the Thursday night matchup against the world champ Eagles.
We talk about coaches on the hot seat, head coaches. Steve Sarkisian, if they continue to struggle in the red zone, his seat gets hotter and hotter by the week. So that is something to watch for the Atlanta Falcons every week is, do they finally look like the Falcons once they're in the scoring zone? Once they have one of 20 on passes in the end zone to Julio Jones over the last 2 years. That is an abomination. On the flip side, the Panthers keep drafting new corners because they keep looking for someone who can guard Julio Jones. They ain't found him yet. Josh Norman, they liked him. He couldn't guard Julio Jones. They let him leave. He put Julio 140 a game the last 4 years against Carolina. Watch him to have a huge game.
Well, for the Falcons, the red zone situation is dire and made even worse because that's what they said they worked on all offseason.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers now. No doubt Big Ben wants to forget about last week's game against Cleveland. Despite not losing or winning that game, for that matter, Big Ben is looking to bounce back from that game where he turned the ball over 5 times. And even though he didn't practice all week with a sore elbow, he said he will be good to go this Sunday against the Chiefs. Chris Carter, what do you expect from Big Ben on Sunday?
I expect Big Ben. Big Ben plays great at home. That's what he's done. And after injuries, man, Big Ben is a guy who can bounce back. Woe is me. Oh, my shoulder, my knee. Oh, he gets the extra attention. Oh, he don't mind the attention as far as his injuries. Ben, are you hurt? All the other quarterbacks. No, Ben. Yeah, my neck. My neck, man. My neck's been bothering me.
And Tomlin went out of his way this week when he was asked about the injury. He said, listen, Big Ben's got an elbow. It had nothing to do with the loss or the tie on Sunday. Like, Tomlin was removing some of the excuses.
So I expect Big Ben to bounce back, just not only because he's been that type of resilient player, but who you're going against. This secondary not real good.
Oh, it's bad, actually.
Oh, they weren't good last week. So it's like, oh, man, Ben will get back on track. And Juju Schuster, big game against the Browns. AB, they concentrated on him, were able to keep him in check. Expect both of them to have big game. They'll have a creative game plan. Last week, the Browns let Connor run the ball. So, Jenny, you was just wondering, hey, what about Connor? He got all them points, all those yards, right, in fantasy football?
Yes.
Right? They let him run. They let him have it because they didn't think he was going to beat him. Will Kansas City do the same thing, double up on A.B., allow Connor to get that yardage? That's what we're going to see in Pittsburgh's home opener.
Listen, this is historically a bad matchup for the Chiefs. They haven't won in Pittsburgh since 1986. More recently, since Andy Reid got there, and the Chiefs have been good almost every year Andy Reid's been there, the Steelers have beat them 4 out of 5
times. So they haven't won in Pittsburgh since you were a baby?
Since I was, 2 years old. That is correct.
Oh, man.
Since I was a baby. That is correct.
That face right there looks just like your daughter right now.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. She is a baby. This is a team that always gives the Chiefs trouble, historically and recently. And I don't know how the Chiefs can stop the Steelers. This is a game where I think Big Ben could average 10 yards per pass. This is a game where I think Antonio Brown could have 185 yards receiving a couple touchdowns, even if he's double teamed. Like, it's not only they don't have the corners, because they got rid of Marcus Peters because he's a problem in the locker room. He's not a problem when he gets pick sixes for the Rams, neither here nor there. But Eric Berry hadn't practiced in a month. Eric Berry's not going to play in this football game. I know they won't officially rule him out. I'm telling you, he ain't practicing. He's coming off a torn Achilles. He hasn't practiced in a month. He's not playing. So now we're talking about a starting secondary of Steve Nelson, Eric Murray, Ron Parker, and Kendall Fuller. Kendall Fuller was a nice nickel corner that they got over from Washington in the Alex Smith trade. He's not a starting outside corner. They also don't have a reliable pass rush. Like, the Chiefs are going to have to beat teams by overpowering them offensively, by Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, that combination. The Steelers can match you weapon for weapon even without L. Bell. I think it's an awful matchup for Kansas City. There's a reason, despite looking good in week one and the Steelers looking awful, that the Steelers are 5.5-point favorites. Like, I think the Chiefs are going to have to score 35 points to win this football game. I would be shocked if the Steelers don't get into at least the low 30s, and that's a big ask for Patty Mahomes. Now, he could do it, but Pat Mahomes also has yet to have a turnover in his very brief NFL career. Like, that's going to come as well.
Do you have as much confidence? I mean, we talked about that yesterday. I mean, you talk about a team that's going into Pittsburgh, hasn't won a game in 30 years, and then you say, oh, Pat Mahomes, do us a favor, go out and try to beat this Steelers defense. I know you have a ton of faith, a lot more in Mahomes in this offense. Do you see?
Let me tell you what's going to happen. The reality. Week number one, player of the week. Week number two, go to Pittsburgh and get it done against T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree. Oh, they're outside rushers. I believe these to be the best two in Pittsburgh in a long time. T.J. Watt, I think 3 sacks. He had 4, I think, credited. Then they gave 1 to Bud Dupree after the official stats and stuff were given out. But J.J.'s younger brother, outstanding. In the offseason, he was playing on the weak side of the defense where he wasn't great in space. He's playing on the strong side of the defense now where he's more accustomed. He can see the quarterback. He's going against smaller guys, too, not against the left tackle. He's going against tight ends and right tackles. So Pittsburgh feels if they have it right in these young players who they drafted, and they're starting to come into their prime as far as getting after the passer, that's what he's going to see.
And one of the reasons T.J. Watt was so effective along with Bud Dupree in week one is the Steelers in that 3-4 defense, they have 2 outstanding defensive ends in Cameron Hayward and Stephen Tuitt. Like, those two guys, their ability to eat up blockers while TJ and Bud Dupree come on the outside. I would love to come here. If the Chiefs win this football game, we have to start talking about the Chiefs in a different way. Not just an exciting young team, but one of, right there with New England, is one of the best teams in the AFC. I don't think they can win this football game.
Tyreek Hill, one more good game, and I'm going to consider him potentially to be a number one receiver.
Oh, okay. Just one more. Just one
the
more.
Only thing holding him back is you evaluate
him. That is so true. I appreciate that honesty. If I hadn't last year called Tyreek Hill a number one receiver and CeCe just shot it down, you would already be called a number one receiver. You just don't want me to ever be right.
No, I mean, you're right, but I mean, just every once in a while.
Okay. Tyreek Hill, huge game last week.
We got to take a break. Coming up, Tom Brady's got some words for the Jaguars defense. Hear from him next on First Things First. We're back here with Chris Canty. We are going viral. Check out this video from the Chiefs' official Twitter account saying, quote, walking into work versus walking out of work. That's Sammy Watkins walking in front. Tyreek Hill dancing behind him.
I get it. I hadn't seen this. Sammy, with a very business-like approach. Tyreek out there dancing.
He can do whatever he wants as long as he's riding out like he did against the Chargers in week one.
Yeah, he's real fast.
Yeah, he's special. Yeah, he's special.
He's one of the – I understand John Ross had the fastest 40 time since Chris Johnson, tied for the fastest really since Deion of anybody. I feel like Tyreek Hill's faster with the ball in his hands than anybody in the league.
Well, we haven't seen John Ross since college.
That's a good point. John Ross hasn't had a ton of opportunities. Yeah. It's a great point.
Yeah, it's like comparing him against a dead man. Who's faster? The guy that's alive.
Okay. Touché, sir.
Stall about CC. Yeah.
He loves his Kansas City receivers.
Man,
he's so fast. He's faster than a guy I ain't never seen with the ball. Whoa.
All right, I got to hold that out. It's a great counterpoint. Sorry, Jenna.
A rematch of last year's AFC Championship game between the Patriots and the Jaguars, but this one with a hair more fireworks. Last year, Jacksonville almost upset the Pats before Tom Brady lit it up. This year, Jalen Ramsey spent his offseason criticizing players he deemed overrated. He mentioned Gronk. Interesting. Also interesting, Jalen Ramsey seems confident heading into this week's matchup. Listen to this.
I asked your defensive coordinator, if someone said Rob Gronkowski is overrated, what would you say to that person? He said he's crazy.
Might be crazy. I don't care.
People call him the best ever, and you're not going there. You're saying, I guess he's
good. He good now. We ain't gonna get it twisted. He's good, but you saying this to me, is it supposed to bring fear to me or something? Yeah. I don't fear no man. Period.
Is as good as any defense will face all year. They got an incredible rush, great linebackers, great secondary. It's going to be very, very challenging, tough environment, and we'll see what made up.
Jalen Ramsey doesn't fear any man,
nope.
Chris Canty, no man, even though it's a little bit of a different tune than he was singing in the offseason when he talked about Gronk. All right, who's got the edge in this rematch, the Pats offense or this Jaguars defense, Canty?
I'm going to say it's the Pats offense just because we know what they are. The Patriots are going to score points. That's just what it is. It's going to be, somewhere between 21 and 28 points. I think they averaged 28 points a game last year. You saw what they did this year in that opening game against the Texans. So we know what the Patriots are. So I think this is going to be up to the Jaguars offense to be able to match points. So defensively, I know that the Jaguars, they're going to try to take away Rob Gronkowski. You saw in that AFC title game, he only had one catch before he got knocked out with that concussion. But, I mean, they're going to have a plan to deal with Rob Gronkowski. It's about the other guys, and Tom Brady always finds a way because that's just what he and Bill Belichick do. But looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're going to have to find a way to be able to move the football. You saw it in that Giants game after midways through that second quarter where Leonard Fournette got knocked out. They struggled to move the football. They had one scoring drive where they got the ball at midfield. But other than that, they weren't able to move the ball. Only four first downs after that drive. So, I mean, that's a struggle for this Jaguars team offensively. Leonard Fournette's banged up. I think T.J. Yeldon is a serviceable running back, but he's not the difference maker that Fournette is for that offense. So I'm going to say that the Patriots have the advantage in this matchup because I don't know that the Jags offense is going to be able to match points with Tom Brady.
Yeah, Pat's offense definitely do have the advantage. New England, they don't listen to any of the interviews that other teams do. But what I've seen through the years, is, especially from any defensive back that makes any type of comment about New England, if they were cheating, anything that they say that might be a shot at New England, in the game plan, during the game, Bill Belichick will either run at that person with big linemen or someone like Gronk, or they run either a double move or a counter move, a trick play, to be able to take advantage and make somebody look real, real bad. So I expect them, if Jalen is going to guard Gronk, I expect in some of those situations, they're going to get Gronk the football, but also I would expect them to run at Gronk so Gronk could block Jalen. And that's not something, you don't have to be afraid, but that's something that Jalen does not want to see. He doesn't have the eye discipline. People say, what's eye discipline? How they see the ball. How they see offenses. And Jalen's used to being outside, and he's not used to having the action in front of him that linebackers see. That's why when Bart Scott was here, he was talking about if you try to travel with Gronk, Belichick will do some things to take advantage of things that you're not used to seeing. So huge advantage to Pat's offense going against a very good Jags defense.
To Chris, to your point about if you chirp during the week, they might have a special play for you in the game plan. Famously, I'll just go back a decade because it happened to a buddy of mine, Anthony Smith, safety for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers always been liking talking. The Pats are undefeated And he says during the week, they're not that good. We can beat. I forget the exact comment. I do not forget what the Patriots did. Mm. They ran a flea flicker directly at Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith got roasted, and Brady met him in the end zone. Brady did a direct run 35 yards downfield to get in Anthony Smith's face. Brady actually got a taunting penalty. I think maybe the only one of his career in that moment yelling at Anthony Smith. Later in the show, we're going to talk about who we like in this matchup, Gronk or Jalen. I like Jalen to, quote, win the matchup statistically, but that's because I think the Patriots are going to, if they do have them matched up, I think they will be happy with it. I think they will throw to the running backs. I think they will get Cordarrelle Patterson involved in the quick screen game. I think they will see if what they saw in week one, Philip Dorsett, is duplicable week over week. Like, I think that the Pats would be fine with the Jags changing their defensive game plan around slowing down Gronk if it makes everyone else on their defense, particularly the secondary, have to play either slightly out of position or not exactly what they're used to doing. Because the way the Jags have been a dominant defense is they do what they do and they make you adjust. If the Jags adjust preemptively to the Pats, that works in the Pats' favor.
And who they're going to do it with, I don't know. Rex Burkhead, the concussion protocol. Like, I don't know who. They got James White, Sony Michel, their first-round draft pick, University of Georgia, not up yet and playing. They're going to go back to Super Bowl hero, James White, Dorsett. Like, I don't know who they're going to go to, and the Jags don't
Jeremy
know that
Hill
either.
Went on IR this week.
So they got a shortage of skilled guys like I've never seen before. So that's a different set of challenges, and that will be played out in the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. We don't know who the guys are going to be, but we know that Bill Belichick will utilize somebody and get some production and be able to move the ball.
Nobody works it more in their advantage than Bill Belichick does.
He always finds a way. That's what he does. And Tom Brady is so versatile in terms of the concepts that he's able to adopt because he's seen so much football. He's got answers based on the defensive looks that he's facing. So I don't worry about what the Pats offense is. That's always going to be the constant in that game. The Pats offense is going to find a way to score the points. That's why I always look at this matchup and I say it's about what the Jacksonville Jaguars do on the offensive side of the ball. I trust Blake Bortles more as a runner than a thrower, and that's a problem when you talk about the quarterback position. So it remains to be seen whether Blake Bortles can duplicate what we saw in that first half of that AFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. But from what I saw in MetLife on Sunday when they played the Giants, I don't have a lot of high expectations for Bortles in this matchup.
The Jags are going to, your point, Kenny, the Jags are going to have to score at least 21 points to have any shot. And how can they do that? They have no legitimate weapons on the outside at wide receiver. Their running back is banged up, and the running back, at least thus far in his career, has been limited already anyway. They would need Blake Bortles to have at least, what, 75 yards rushing? Like, Belichick talked all week about how Bortles is a real rushing threat. They are going to have to, through almost smoke and mirrors, find a way to generate an offense. Because against the Giants, they couldn't. They scored 20, but seven of them were Miles Jack going the other way with an Eli Manning tipped interception. I know there's one of the marquee games of the week. I don't expect it to be one of the best games of the week. Mm. I think the Patriots can handle this Jacksonville team, even in Jacksonville, with relative ease.
All right, Chris, stay with us. Coming up, is week two already a must-win for the Cowboys and the Giants? That's next. This is First Things First. You know, we speak so much about how it is Tom Brady can remain so focused year in and year out. He loves the competition. He thrives on that competition. It's almost like he could taste it. Even after all these years in the league, he still wants to look at the opponent, I'm going to beat you. And that's something that you got to give him credit for. It burns inside him, Chris.
Yeah, what? Jenna, that's the part of it that you don't get anywhere else in life. When you come out of that tunnel on Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, that's the special part about football. There's no feeling like that. The adrenaline, the butterflies, just looking forward to the matchup. It's excitement. It's anxiousness. It's all of those things wrapped up in one. There's no one word for it, but it's special. And that's why we all play the game, for that feeling.
Randy Moss was the opposite way. I ain't going to run real quick. I just want them to see what they're going to be guarding. I said, what you doing? I said, I'm just letting them look at it. He said, I walk out there because I don't want them to see how fast I really am. So I act nice and lazy and everything. But those pregame warm-ups, even Tom Brady, 8th Super Bowl, I was on the field. When he took the field this year in Minneapolis, special, special moment. That fire, it is there. That's why he is the GOAT.
Good stuff. All right. How could a week two game in the NFL be called a must-win? Well, when you're the Dallas Cowboys and you lost your first game and you're playing a divisional game Sunday night against your arch rivals in the Giants and you are not sure how good your quarterback is? Dak Prescott coming off a week one loss where he threw for just 179 yards knows that he has to improve.
Simply just gotta play better, and that's what this week's about. That's what going forward, and fortunate enough to have 50 more games to do that.
Everybody here wants to win, and we know the importance of this game. You know, you don't want to get 0-2 and start the season off that way, even though it is a long season. You just want to start fast and finish fast, finish strong, too.
Can't beat ourselves. We can't get behind early in the game. We can't get behind the sticks. We got to come out. You got to establish that run and yeah, get some momentum early. We got to start fast.
Landon Collins said earlier this week that, again, they were going to concentrate on Zeke. They wanted to put the ball in your hands because they think they had a better chance.
Challenge accepted. Challenge accepted.
Why do you like that so much, Kenny?
No, I'm looking forward to it. This is a primetime matchup between two teams that I played for, two organizations that I follow and I know very well, and I know how big this game is. I mean, when you hear Landon Collins talking about how they want to take the ball out of Ezekiel Elliott's hands and put it on Dak Prescott,
yeah.
I think that's really what this game is going to come down to. You know that the importance of being able to start the season and not fall into 0-2. The Giants, if they lose this game, they would have started the last four out of the last five seasons 0-2. The one season that they wouldn't have started 0-2, they would have made the playoffs. That was the 2016 season. So they understand how important it is to try to win this game on the road and against the division opponent. This is a big ball game for the New York Giants and for the Dallas Cowboys. The loser of this game is going to be in a hole, especially when you consider the landscape of the NFC. A lot of good teams. It'll be tough to climb back into that playoff picture.
I know we're going to spend probably the bulk of time talking about the Cowboys side of this. I want to just jump off there from the Giants side for a moment. The reason I think this game is an absolute critical, legitimate in week two must-win game for the Giants is what they have after this game leading into the bye. Look at the gauntlet the Giants have starting really with week four. After this week, they're in Houston against the Texans, but then it's Saints, Panthers, Eagles, Falcons. You have Washington and then the bye. A month straight of football against double-digit win teams, playoff teams in your conference from the previous year. Teams that at least all those teams, maybe not Atlanta, looked pretty damn good in week one. I know the Saints defense looked real shaky, but they still put up 40 points. Like the Giants, you start out 0-2, all of a sudden you're like, all right, what's our best case scenario headed into the bye? 4-4? Best case scenario, and that's hard to figure out. So I understand why for both these teams it's critical, and for Dak in particular it's critical. But the Giants schedule gets hard early as opposed to hard late, which is why that early start is so important for them.
CeCe, who needs this win more, the Dallas Cowboys or the New York Giants?
I would go the other way, and this is what I know is going to happen. I know the general manager for the Giants, Dave Gettleman, he's got a 4 or 5 year contract. He's not going to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Sherman, the head coach, it's his first game. He's 0-1 first game. Yeah. This will be 2. He's not going to get fired. He got a 5 year deal, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
The ownership there is stable. They cash flow positive. They're not going to get rid of them. They're happy with their draft pick in Barkley. They're happy they got our guy signed, OBJ, to a long-term contract. Nothing's going to happen for the Giants. You let Dallas lose. First of all, you let them start playing bad. They're going to lose the home field advantage because they're going to get booed off the field.
Yes.
And also, doubt is starting to creep in. All right? How good are the Dallas Cowboys? Dak and Zeke, they came into the league. Man, this thing is easy. You can throw the ball. We can run the ball. Oh, this thing is easy. Last year, they got a real, real test of what NFL football is like. And then right now, in their last four games, they scored 46 points. You let them struggle. All that blame is going to go on Dak because you can't blame it on the offensive line.
Nope.
No one's going to blame Jerry and his son, Steven.
No one's going to blame Zeke.
Okay, so this is a bigger game for Dallas and for Dak because his career as a starter, his career as a franchise quarterback, and if you think the Dallas Cowboys can lose this and go to 0-2 and people not ask for Jason Garrett's job, y'all look at it, the collateral damage. Giants 0-2, no one's going to get fired. In Dallas, 0-2, they're going to be all over our show. We're going to be doing segments on who to get rid of. Dez Bryant should be there. Jason Witten, they should go get him out the booth. He was better. Well, yeah. That's something else. Wow. That's something else. as a tight end. But did bring a lot of leadership. Those are real issues in Dallas.
Right.
There are no real issues for the Giants.
No, you're right. There aren't any real issues for the Giants. And when you look at what the Giants are going to do, they're going to force Dak to be a volume passer. Landon Collins, all the Giants defenders, they've been talking about it. They're not going to let Ezekiel Elliott beat them. The same thing the Carolina Panthers did. They talked the Cowboys out of being able to run the football. That's why Zeke only had 15 carries. But if you look at Zeke's entire career, he's played 26 games. There are only four games where he's had 15 carries or less. So the Dallas Cowboys, they know that too. So they know the only chance that they have to win is to be able to run the football and give it to Zeke. In order to do that, in order to create lanes, just because Dak Prescott hasn't proven himself as a passer down the field, they're going to have to get Dak involved in the running game. That's why I think you will see some zone read elements in this offense. Jerry already on the record this week saying that Dak has some of the elements that Cam Newton's game has. So I think you'll look to see Dak Prescott get involved more as a runner in this game just to create more opportunities for Zeke to be a difference maker.
It should be noted, one of the reasons Zeke only had 15 carries was because the Cowboys weren't running very many plays. It's not like they dropped Dak back 45 times. He only had 29 throws himself. When you don't get past midfield for the entire first half of a football game, that's a lot of three and outs. It's a lot of short possessions. But to Chris's point about Dak, like, it is now panic time in Dallas if he plays poorly on Sunday night. Dak's first 24 games, that's a season and a half. They're 18-6. He has a 39-8 touchdown interception ratio. That would be best in league history. He has a 102 quarterback rating. That'd be second best in league history. The nine games since, they're 4-5. They have scored less than 10 points five times. He has 6 touchdowns to 9 picks.
Yep.
And he has a 75 quarterback rating. Like, that sample size is getting bigger and bigger by the week. So, as critical as it is for Dallas to win, it's almost more important that Dak plays well. I'm telling you right now, if you're a Cowboys fan, I'd rather come out 0-2 with Dak having an outstanding game than win this game 10-7 and Dak once again look super limited and that be something hanging over their head all season long.
Why? Why do you think the numbers have gone down so drastically? Is it that other teams have figured him out? Is it that his game was more one-dimensional than we thought? Is it that the sample size of having lost Zeke for a couple games in there?
It's a combination of things. We're going to force him to throw the ball and throw the ball deep and outside and deep down the middle. Also, we're going to put a lot of guys at the line of scrimmage. If you want to decide to run the ball, Dallas, they got scared out of the run.
Exactly.
But the thing that Nick's point is, as far as his confidence, the wide receivers are going to start getting frustrated because they're going to start getting blamed. Now, if I start outside and we throw the ball 30 sometime, I got one reception, and that's what they're starting outside
Allen
guys
Hurts.
Had.
Yep.
So they're going to start making sure they don't get blamed for it. And nothing's more demoralizing to a quarterback. And I see it in Jacksonville happen all the time. They got 8 guys in the box. And you know what we decide to do? We don't run the best play. We run the best play so that I don't make a mistake. Mm. And that's for me to reach back and hand the ball to a tailback because they feel it's safer for us to run and them have 2 blockers free than me throwing the football. It's demoralizing for a young quarterback. And to think that Dak is still not in that category where he can't get demoralized, that's what can happen on Sunday night. Let that offensive line not play as well, especially the center and the guards, where they're going to get pressure in this game from the New York Football Giants. And you're going to see a young quarterback, and Landon Collins isn't the only one the league is saying.
Yep.
We're challenging Dak to beat us. It ain't Landon Collins. Don't blame it on him. This is the book. The book's out on the Cowboys. And, man, you can read it. It's like a third grade.
Picture book?
Yeah, picture book or a third grade little rhyme book. Like, that's what.
nursery rhyme.
Yeah, nursery rhyme. There you go. Yeah. It wouldn't be third grade. It'd be a nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Interpret for me, Nick.
I got you, see.
Oh,
I was,
okay. I was trying to help
you get there.
I'm going to lose my confidence.
Wow.
Who wins the game, Chris?
I'm going to say the New York Giants win this game. I just don't trust Dak as a passer, and I don't know that the Cowboys do too.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.